Call for the weeping mothers, the lost fathers, and the forsaken children, and let them come quickly, for a voice of crying is heard out of Zion. For we are greatly confused, for death has come into our ghettos to cut off the young men and women from the streets of Philadelphia, New York, L.A., Georgia, Ohio, Florida, Mississippi, and throughout America, South America, the Caribbean islands, Africa, Asia, and all over the world. So return unto me, thus saith Yah, and I will return unto you, O my people.
Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all that getting, get an understanding. Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com. That's timeforawakening.com. Which is the home page, and listen to the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com, and listen to the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your carry-around devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live even into your car if you have the auxiliary connection. Again, it's time for an Awakening Radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. That's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, you can type in Time for an Awakening Radio Program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily. And do me a favor, before you leave that page, hit that like button for me. That's Time for an Awakening Radio Program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for Awakening Media, the home page is there. We're doing a little revamping to the home page to take into account some of the new programming. I guess things will be done within the next couple of weeks, but you can still log on to timeforanawakening.com, and that'll take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media, where you'll see a lot of interesting content, more articles and podcasts of the programs that you can download, listen at later times, or even share with your friends. So again, make that one of your favorites and put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, we're scheduled to have a special guest join us. I think two special guests, if I'm not mistaken, activists and organizers of the No Justice, No Profit direct action movement going on in St. Louis, Reverend Dinah Tatman and Reverend Ronald Bobo, is scheduled to join us this evening to talk about the national movement and how black communities nationwide can be involved also. And they're scheduled to join us in the 7 o'clock hour. And we'll be right back to get things started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go and what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard?
Yes, sir, Brother Ellen.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. What about yourself?
I'm doing great. Looking forward to the conversation this evening.
Yes, it seems it's going to be very informative in relationship to development and taking things to the next step. So it should be great for us.
Before we get started with welcoming in our guests, I want to let you know about a couple of events going on. I mentioned Friday that Dr. Umar Johnson sent me a notice that he would be in Philadelphia here at the Warm Daddy's restaurant. It's a black-owned facility, black-owned restaurant. Very nice black-owned sit-down restaurant, I might add, on Delaware Avenue, Delaware and Reed. He'll be there tomorrow, which is Monday, for any of the listeners in the Philadelphia area. It'll be 6 to 10 because it'll be live entertainment along with the lecture. The admission is $20 for the live entertainment and the lecture. Again, that's at the Warm Daddy's restaurant. I don't have the number in front of me. Any of the folks in the local area can easily get that number for Warm Daddies. I kind of misplaced it. I'll probably get it during the break and read the announcement again. But check it out tomorrow night. I want to try to be there. I got to move some things around. But it's at Warm Daddies tomorrow starting at 6 in the evening, 6 to 10 in the evening. Dr. Umar Johnson, along with live entertainment, will be at Warm Daddies restaurant down at Delaware Avenue and Reed in Philadelphia. The African Independence Day Organization and Committee and the Urban Shaman Production presents the second annual Buy Black Marketplace and Pre-Kwanzaa Celebration, which is Saturday, December the 23rd at the historic Church of the Advocate, 1801 Diamond Street in Philadelphia. The donation at the door is $5. Children are absolutely free. It'll be special guest performances, speakers, ceremonial lighting of the Kanara. If any vendors are interested for more information, you can email them at africanindependenceday@gmail.com, or you can go to the website at africanindependenceday.org, or you can dial them by phone at 267-521-1544. Again, that's 267-521-1544. Again, that's the Buy Black Marketplace and Pre-Kwanzaa Celebration at the historic Church of the Advocate, 1801 Diamond Street here in Philadelphia. It's $5 admission at the door on Saturday, December 23rd. Children are absolutely free. So come on down. We were invited to do a live broadcast from that location, Brother Richard. So So I guess we'll kind of put things in order and see how we can facilitate that. But it should be interesting down there because they're going to have a lot of vendors, a lot of speakers. I want to try to reach out to either Businesses in the Black to get him here, or the brother that did Wilmington on Fire to try to get them here to maybe show the documentary film either after the event or during the event. I'll see. I got to kind of network with Brother Obi and some of the other brothers. They'll be here probably within the next couple of weeks to talk about the event also anyway. Tonight, we have two special guests joining us out of St. Louis, two of the organizers that are involved in the No Justice, No Profit direct action in St. Louis. It was a press conference held on Thursday at the Westside Missionary Baptist Church at 4675 Page Boulevard in St. Louis. And our guests, both of our guests, were speaking at the event, and I want to bring them on so they can let our listening audience know about the continuation of the activism that is going on in St. Louis. We have as our special guests, Reverend Dinah Tatman and Reverend Ronald Bobo is with us. Is everybody there?
Yes.
Yes, we're here.
How are you? How are you? How are you this evening?
We're
great,
wonderful.
Elliot.
I'm glad to have you with us.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Glad to have you with us on Time for an Awakening with myself and Brother Richard.
And welcome to be
hello,
see
Brother
you all right now. Glad to have you.
Thank you so much.
Reverend Tatman, you know, I saw the announcement. In fact, I put it on Time for Awakening radio program's Facebook fan page about the announcement Thursday, the press conference. I also listened to your exchange with, I guess, one of those conservative talk show hosts in reference to what some
of the KMLVX.
some of the reference to what our brothers and sisters are doing in St. Louis. Give us some background on the No Justice, No Profit movement and what's been going on. Let the listening audience know that you brothers and sisters didn't just jump out there after this verdict came down in September. That this was a long time in planning. Talk about some of the background behind what's going on in St. Louis.
Well, the background, like you said, Elliot, and I appreciate you pointing that fact out. This is 3 years of work. This started when Michael got murdered by Darren Wilson.
Okay.
And it sparked and morphed each time with the continuing killing of black and brown bodies by our law enforcement with no impediment. And so, like you said, it took us a long time to get here. We have been working on it, formalizing, talking about it, mulling it over, like any decision that's going to affect people's lives. Because we know an economic boycott, when you embark on something like that, you know, it's going to affect people in a lot of ways. But what we wanted to do, because there is so much, and the all-in is not just the law enforcement, the injustice in the justice system, but it's also all of the disparities grouped together. Here in St. Louis, there was a report done a couple of years ago by East-West Gateway Council of Governments. And they came up with that brown and black people, African-American people, are three times more likely to live in poverty. And that St. Louis had the highest, listen to this, Elliot, the highest racial economic disparities of any major urban area in America. And that's deep. And so you put that, you couple that on top of not even getting an opportunity to have access to equal justice, that's just a volcano. And that's what happened. And so we came together and we looked at what were viable tools, since we've tried everything else and nothing worked. that we can enact that would give some type of semblance that we had power and that we had a voice, because we were feeling powerless. Our voting block, we used to have a very strong African-American presence in the Alderman Board and Jeff City and different elected officials, and that was disseminated by term limits and redistricting. So that took away our voting clout we had. Then, you know, we start looking at trying to rebuild some of our blighted communities that was blighted with high poverty, high unemployment, high vacant houses, and all of that. And then the lands start being taken by eminent domain and gentrification. So we had no clout and no resources there. And then trying to enact some viable bills that would put some laws in place that would be at least give us equal justice under the law. And therein lies the excessive force by police. And then, you know, other laws they have in place. Our police force here now are called special victims. If you look at them, you can be charged with a felon, which we all know that's a federal offense. And so we had no other recourse. We said there is one thing that we own that can't be taken, and that's our money. We are the number one consumers in the nation. And so we have had to not only buy products and service from other communities, because our communities have been stripped. We don't have viable grocery stores. We don't have viable malls. We don't have viable entertainment venues. So we have to go outside our community to get basic services and resources and products. And that was by design. And so we said we can start making decisions on who we're going to spend our dollars with. How are we going to recapture our wealth and build a significant tax base for our communities? And that's our dollars. We wanted to decide who we're going to spend our money with. We're the number one consumers. We consume more than we produce. We have very viable black businesses out there. And we're just making a conscious choice, instead of spending our monies with those corporations and organizations that don't reciprocate by buying our services or enduring our products, that we'll just keep our money at home and start building our own businesses, investing more in our own businesses where we can build significant tax base, revitalize our communities. That was the only recourse we had.
Reverend Diamond, I want to go into some of the press release, because I want to want you to expand on some of the things that are written here. But let me go back, because I want to get some of our listening audience to understand the gravity of what you stated earlier about the, and I'll use a term that some of our ancestors were lynched under, which was reckless eyeballing. I think that you stated right. that still is an offense in the area of Missouri. In fact, if I recall, that's how that whole exchange happened between Michael Brown and the killer cop, Darren mm-hmm. Wilson, is because he was looking mm-hmm. at the cop. So you're saying that that is still in effect in Missouri?
Well, they have a bill, and it's called Special Victim. Our police force are now classified as a special victim, which means they have extra special rights. You can't look at them. You can't touch them. You can't tap them. You can't bump them. You can't do anything.
Okay.
They're now prized commodities.
I just wanted to kind of get you to repeat that again for our listening audience to understand clearly, you know, what
That's
our people
the law.
Yeah, what our people are up against. Now, mm-hmm. it's two things that that you and Reverend Bobo have put in the press release that I want to kind of expand on and get you to talk about more. I like the two statements that is at the top of the press release, and I'm going to read them for the listening audience to understand that what the brothers and sisters are doing there in St. Louis need to be done in other cities, but this is not a new struggle. Let me read the two comments that you make, that you put on your press release from our ancestors. This first one is from Ida B. Wells Barnett. It says, the appeal to the white man's pocket has ever been more effectual than all the appeals ever made to his conscience. You got the second one here by W.E.B. Du Bois. Daily, the Negro is coming more and more to look upon law and justice not as protecting safeguards, but as sources of humiliation and oppression. The laws are made by men who have little interest in him. They are executed by men who are absolutely, who have absolutely no motive for treating black people with courtesy or consideration. And finally, the accused lawbreaker is tried not by his peers, but often by men who would rather punish 10 innocent Negroes than let one guilty one escape. I'm glad that you put those two messages up there, messages from our ancestors, a message is almost 100 years old that state the same problem that we're dealing with. You know, it's necessary right now, because you mentioned about we can no longer afford, in this same press release, you mentioned that we can no longer afford to be blind consumers. And in every city where we are, every locality, whether they're small southern towns or large northern cities, our people are blind consumers. Talk about the struggle that you, Reverend Bobo, and others have had in St. Louis to get our people to understand that we no longer can afford to be blind consumers.
Well, Pastor Bobo and I had an extensive conversation about that, and I'll let him speak on that.
Okay.
One of the great things that we find is in the banking industry as well, that we give our dollars away for investment to be used in other places, charged extraordinary rates, and given nothing in return, especially as it relates to, in this area, the housing situation. There's no black bank here. When there was one, we did not support it, and so it went away. There is no black credit union here that can be used.
Okay.
And so we have no power. Our power is to has been so destroyed. We, from our churches to our businesses to our homes, we're unable to do anything that helps our own community. There was a study that was done here called Fragmented by Design, by one of the professors at University of Missouri, St. Louis, that talks about how there was a collusion between the banks, the mortgage companies, the real estate companies, rather, and the insurance companies, and how they worked to determine how to keep black people out and how to blight the black community. Now, I'm sure it's the exact same thing that's happening all across the country. It's just this particular study let the cat out of the bag. It's on YouTube. You can see a 10-minute clip of it on YouTube, Fragmented by Design. And it talks about how St. Louis County has 91 municipalities. Now, we're not that large of an area to have 91 municipalities in St. Louis County, and each one with covenant restrictions to keep black people out. And if a black person had enough money to buy, giving them extraordinary interest rates, as well as giving them at least a 20% down payment they had to come up with in order to move into the areas. But if they got in, would seek to give them interest rates so high they couldn't keep their property. That has occurred over and over again. I know of one situation in which a church was trying to get a loan, and it took them 32 times before they were approved because the area had been completely redlined. We have now all of North County, which is predominantly black, middle class, which is all, everybody bought their properties in good faith. They're all underwater, all of the properties. All these middle class professional people, they bought their homes for $200,000 and $300,000 and have lost half of their value. We have no power, and all of this has to change and be turned around immediately. And the only thing that will do that is if we come together, put our monies together, bank together, and create community in a whole new way.
And that's why, Elliot, and I want, I'm going to keep repeating this until we get off. Keep in mind that St. Louis was deemed the most segregated state in the nation, as well as the most impoverished state in the nation. And so you couple that on top of all of the other disparities. We're number one in the nation in expulsion of our babies, our brown and black babies from grade school to fourth grade, number one in expulsions. And you look at the health disparity. So we've been told, well, why don't you guys take care of your own communities? Why don't you, you need to clean up your own communities? And what we say to that is we have been taxpaying citizens like everyone else. But our tax dollars, along with the dollars we have to spend in other communities, have been used to build up other communities where our communities continue to be raped over and over and over again. And, I mean, you can go to a sprawling community and go two blocks down the street into an African-American community. No street lights, which are safety hazards. Sidewalks are in disrepair, and some, you don't even have sidewalks. Streets with potholes, vacant buildings, which are safety hazards as well, and they're crime havens. And so we're saying we have invested in this local community as tax-paying citizens, and we have not received equitable return on our investments. And so we said, since you all have used the dollars that we have lended you, we are now determining we're taking those dollars back, and we are going to redirect those resources in our own communities. Now, the services we don't have in our communities because they've been closed, like I said, no malls, no viable restaurants, no entertainment venues. Even our recreation centers that the city is supposed to maintain on the other side of the aisle, they're maintained. They're pristine. Some of them have been rebuilt and have swimming pools and waterworks and golf courses and doggy hotels. Mm-hmm. Ours have electrical outlets that are falling out of the wall, ceiling tiles that are missing with, pipes exposed, restrooms in disrepair. But ours belong to the city. Our parks, we don't have lights in all of our parks and viable playground equipment and places where we can go. And so what does that breed? You have poverty and high poverty, high unemployment. You have crime. So our way to fight all of this is the economic boycott. Bring those resources back into our community.
You know, I'm
glad. Recirculate them among our black businesses.
I'm glad that you're mentioning this. Myself and Brother Richard was just talking about this on Friday, how similar things is going on here in Philadelphia, which is the fourth. It kind of fluctuates between the fourth and fifth largest city in this country. But the same cauldron of misrepresentation is going on here. Brother Richard asked me a question earlier, and I'm glad that you touched on it about the financial institutions that have left the area or don't exist. Brother Richard, jump in here with because I know that you asked me that question earlier.
Yeah, you know, but first I wanted to, you know, thank you for, you know, Reverend, for, you know, really recognizing the state. And as I heard you explain what's happening in St. Louis, it sounded like a siege, right? I guess in business, it would be, it's coming close to a hostile takeover. So does that mean that the area that African Americans live, and you mentioned a middle class community or district, and then lower income districts, are those now considered, to your mind, valuable property to those who have control over the power of land acquisition and development?
I'm not sure they're trying to do land acquisition and development at this point. You know, they seek to blight first.
Okay.
Right.
And so that's usually the way they go. And so that if, in fact, there is no development, if there is no insurance money that will flow, if banks won't loan, because we have a tremendously unbanked area of St. Louis, and so the feds have come down on some of that because there's so much area that's unbanked. Some of the banks are now having been fined or starting to come into our community. But that is a perpetual problem. In the city, there are some areas that have been blighted, and now they are trying to take that. And there's an area called the Central West End. Dynamite mentioned about where within a block or two, you can see this extraordinary difference. There's a street called Delmar that's in the black community, and it separates it from these multi-million-dollar homes on the other side. Well, now they're trying to move into the community that they blighted in order to take it. So that is exactly what's happening there.
And so that was the plan. It's called a land bank. They blight it. They let it devalue. And they come back and buy it for pennies on a dollar, and then they put up the high rises and the big developments. And we are moved further and further out, and our land continue and our homes continue to be devalued because we don't have any viable services to build a tax base.
And following up on it, because I'm looking. I recognize the economic boycott as a strategy in order to really, it sounds like two things, to consolidate the economic, reconsolidate the economic, the spending power back within the black community specifically, and then also as a organizing tool utilize for the black community in St. Louis. My question is, since both of you are ministers, how expansive, and I don't know how many denominations or churches are in St. Louis, but we know that historically churches have been the foundation of the African-American community. How many other ministers and pastors are involved in this effort that you're pushing forward at this time?
Well, the core team that I pulled together, and that's a great question, and thank you, brother. My core team is, of course, Pastor Bobo, who is my minister, my father in the ministry, and then one of my mentors and friends, the minister Donald Muhammad of Mach 28 here, also Professor Renato Anderson, and then Bishop Elijah Hankerson, and Reverend Brandon Blake. They represent a whole gamut. We have the AMEs, we have Baptists, we have our Muslim brothers and sisters, and then academia. And Church of God in Christ. I'm sorry, yes. And so we look at each one of those. We know our Muslim brothers and sisters, the Nation of Islam, for the last 2 years have been embarking on Up With Jesus, Down With Christmas initiative, which had been very effective. We're joining with them because ours is perpetual. We're telling people don't shop any time with the entities that we picked, but definitely not during those times, Black Friday all the way up until the first of the year, January 31st, which happens to be my birthday. because that's when retailers make the bulk of their monies are made from October to January 31st. And more than 75% of it is made on that short span of time from Good Friday to after Christmas. And so we're joining, you know, we came together to coalesce around one voice, one purpose, and one mission. And that is to not lend our dollars to any entities that continue to not speak out against the suppression and oppression and injustices against brown and black people. And so we've also joined with our brother Zaki Bairudi and his group. Mm-hmm. They've come up with seven entities that they're asking the community not to. So we decided let's coalesce together. We stood together and did the press conference so our community could see. And let me tell you how powerful that was, brothers. We had many news outlets there. They did everything but show that picture. When they reported it. Now you can click on it and it's shown nationally and they wouldn't show it on television. We had to put that out. One station did and he was really barraged. But that was a strong statement of unity that our people we knew needed to see that and hear us. And like you said, any movement that's not undergirded with a spiritual element can't be successful. And we recognize that as well.
And I have just two more questions, Elliot, if I may.
Sure.
I'm leading to the discussion me and Elliot had, and I was kind of reluctant in raising, but in looking at the protests that have been going on since September or after the verdict, came down, it seemed that the there's a large younger population that's involved. And I'm wondering the message for this particular campaign, how is it being received now that you're informing us that the organizing body has come together? How's the population in general, especially amongst the young people and those within those upper income communities that, or at least people who are able to buy those houses in those upper income areas, how are their response to this campaign?
Well, I think part of it is the fact that it's been 3 days, so it's kind of hard to judge all of that in 3 days since Thursday. But like some of us who spoke to it from our pulpits, it was very well received, and they were waiting. It was amazing to me. People are fed up, and we've heard of several people wanting to do the exact same thing throughout the community. So it's kind of like an idea whose time has come. Reverend Tatman has been working feverishly on this, and as a result, I think it was just the right time that God pulled together certain people at this right time to make an impact upon this community. So I don't think we can tell yet because, as I said, it's only been 3 days, and we shall see what will occur as we begin to take the message further.
To speak with the young people and the, I call them our foot soldiers. When the verdict first came out, if you guys were watching, our young people took to the streets and they started doing what we had envisioned. When the verdict came down, I put out on Facebook, no shopping, no justice, no shopping at the Galleria Mall, no justice, no shopping at Snooks, no justice, no shopping at Deerberg's, no justice, no shopping or supporting businesses. And the Del Mar Loop, no justice, no shopping with businesses in the Central West End. The foot soldiers took that, and that's what they did. They start protesting those areas. So they, in action, started what we were writing, And we also said that in the press conference, we are joining with our sons and daughters who are out there up front. So they're taking it to another level. They're going to continue to do what they do, and we are now adding this other piece. They're doing it by aggression, if you would say, or their presence, just their mere presence.
Elliot calls it direct action.
Right.
Elliot calls it direct action. Let's make it politically and energetically correct so they feel motivated. Because I like to hear, I'm glad to hear that you said those points in relationship of June, at least even if you had the ideals and were writing them down, to let them know that their action wasn't just their action. That there is some interconnectedness to that. I'm glad
now,
to hear.
May I say also that Reverend Tatman, she's being quite modest. She helped to lead that whole action during and after the shooting, I should say, of Michael Brown up until then. So she has street cred because she's been there in the street. In the middle of the night, she'd always call me and say, "I'm on my way. Keep me covered in prayer." And so if it's 2 o'clock in the morning, they called her and they would call her. So those young people know her, love her. She's their mom on the street. So she has that credibility out there. So if she makes a call, they hear.
Elliot, it sounds like Reverend Tatman is trying to get these brothers to get out of that bed and get out there with us.
Well, you know what? That's one of the areas I want to cover in the conversation this evening. And just put a pin in that because I want to go back to that.
But my last question is in relationship as a it seems as a structural thing. And again, you know, we're here in Philadelphia and we're looking at Pennsylvania. One thing we were looking at and trying to deal with from 1 million conscious and conscientious Black voters and this whole thing of economic developing an economic base was targeting, asking whether there were church credit unions, because you're asking people to redirect their dollar spending. And I think you did mention that right now there may not be many, if any, church credit unions that people...
The church credit unions... I'm sorry.
Yeah, so that's what I was wondering. Is there any that could be utilized as before the banks as a opportunity where people can redirect their dollars that they don't spend, especially in this moment.
in the interest of fully exposing myself, we have one of those credit unions.
Good.
But sometimes it's hard to get people to understand that it doesn't need to simply be a in-house credit union, that we need to have a credit union that impacts the whole community. And many of our credit unions, their field is so small. Like in this town, there used to be one educational employees, but they changed it now, and their field is larger. And their Vantage Credit Union, another one was the Teachers Credit Union. They changed the field, their first community. And so I'm pushing on that edge to get us to move to that place where we have more than just an in-house credit union that is able to do small things, but to really make a powerful impact in this community.
And just a follow-up on that, because what we're talking about all over is us as a people, because this is happening all over, the acquisition of economic and political power, right? Social, economic, and political power. And again, since these institutions, the religious institutions of all faiths, have been, especially the Christian religious institutions, have been a foundation of the African-American community. It's important, as in the past, for them to, you know, as you say, and I really appreciate that you're saying that, because that's what we've seen here, that most of those credit unions, and they are small, that are in churches, they're not really opened up so that those of us who are outside of the congregation itself can be able to utilize them. But those institutions can be very powerful in holding and then redirecting those finances if the community at large recognize they're there for
well,
that?
Well, many of those were started because of predatory lending practices outside. And so it was done so that members would not have to come and get a benevolence necessarily or go to predatory lenders, but could do manageable loans to help them through. So it was started with noble purposes. It's just that the need has grown so great that we have to do something larger than we conceived in the beginning, that we might impact the whole community.
And they produce jobs, too. Somebody has to do the work in order to do that.
We're in conversation this evening with activists and organizers of the No Justice, No Profit movement in St. Louis. Reverend Dinah Tatman and Reverend Ronald Bobo are with us here on the line. You can join the conversation, too, by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We have a wide listening audience, a national, worldwide listening audience. So some of our people don't need to be silent on this issue. This stuff is going on in the city where you live. If you're not actively involved in some type of movement to divest your dollars from these companies that take advantage of our communities, then start one. You need to get involved. Let's go to the phones here. We got a couple callers on hold. Let's go to 470. 470? 470. Let's put them back on hold. Maybe they stepped away. Let's go to another call. Caller, what's your name? Where are you calling from? Caller?
Greetings.
Yes.
Yes, this is Brother DJ calling from Atlanta.
How are
Greetings,
you, sir?
Everyone.
Greetings.
Yes, I'm well, and I'm certainly enjoying the conversation. And whenever we, you know, come together to discuss Black economic development and changing our condition, my interest is always raised. And, you know, and again, I'm certainly feeling the conversation, you know, from everyone who's on the call and a part of the show this evening. But I think that there's one thing that we're missing in the discussion that I would like to really offer as an opportunity for us to really hone in on. Because, again, when we have these conversations, it's almost as if it's a foregone conclusion that we should even be participating in this economic system to begin with. And I'm speaking specifically about the system of capitalism and whether or not this system, economic system, actually serves the best interest of us as a people and as a community. And so one of the key components of any economic system is the cultural component that economic system projects or pervades. And so consequently, capitalism comes out of a culture of a people that are not us. And so everything that is about European culture does not serve the interests of Black people. It just doesn't. And unless and until, in my opinion, we begin to have that level of conversation first, we will just be reacting to things that are done from us. I always say that capitalism or European culture actually creates the ghetto. And that's a part of the conversation that I actually came into in that every economic system has what's called a value allocation model built in it. And that's a cultural construct. And so the values of capitalism are white values. They're not Black people's values. They're not part and parcel of our culture. They're not. And so consequently, we spend our dollars in ways that, you know, undermine our values. They really do. Mm-hmm. And so our tastes, our values, and our interests have all been designed by the dominant culture. That's why 98% of what we make, we spend outside of our community, because 98% of what we value is outside of our culture. And so we have to be able to address that particular issue, because the way that Black people spend their money is not wrong according to this system. We spend our money exactly the way that the system is designed for us to spend it.
Designed, exactly. And that's an important...
Yeah, go ahead, because I want to... Go ahead, Reverend Tavin.
That's an important assessment, my brother, and that's why we also have an educational arm. first we have to educate ourselves on self-love, okay? And once we put those mechanisms in place, like you said, the culture that we have assimilated into, we've lost our culture that our ancestors practice and build upon. And so we have to revisit that, and I agree with that. But in the interest and the nature of time, education is not either or, it's and also. So while we're embarking on this economic boycott, we're also adding a cultural piece, working with our artists and entertainers and academia, because we don't want this just to be protest by direct action and then the economic arm. We also want to do the cultural piece. So we recognize that, and I'm glad you brought that up, because we do have that as a part of this movement.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And I'll be more than happy to, you know, extend my energy to the family in St. Louis. I'm in Atlanta, but I do have family in St. Louis. And I'll be more than happy to help out and help organize and bring awareness, you know, to the action. I'm a part of an economic development formation called Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative that's designed to do exactly what this conversation is about. To change the economic landscape of people of African descent in this country around the premise of group ownership, not individual capitalism, not the rugged individualism that actually has helped to get us in this situation, but for us to collectively own the businesses in our community and to benefit from that ownership and that power. So thank you.
And so that's that village concept, brother. And that's why Kwanzaa is important, too. We have to push that more. And if you would go to our website, www.nojusticenoprofit.us, and go to the action page and leave your information there and reference, you know, this conversation we had. That way we can get your contact information, because we are putting together some cultural things. I can't mention some of our entertainers who have reached out to us, our national entertainers. So I'm excited. So thank you, my brother.
Before you leave, brother DJ, you know, you raise an excellent point about the cultural piece being added, because a lot of our people have a void there about their culture and principles of their culture. Yes. But I think that situations kind of force our people to look back and to reach back. When Reverend Bobo talked about them forming credit unions in their church, that reminds me of some of the susus and things like that that our people did to network among themselves, to build money, like a village concept. Those things are cultural. And some of our people unwittingly or unknowingly, especially the populace that kind of focuses in on other things all the time, they're kind of unknowingly going back to their culture without realizing it. So I think the situations are going to push our people to understand that we have to get away from things that we have been doing and things that we have been involved in with this system that has been totally against us, and go back to things that's going to reclaim and rescue the minds of our people.
Excellent point, Brother Elliot. Thank you.
Thank you for your call, Brother DJ.
Thank you.
All right. Peace and love.
Peace.
Reverend Tatman and Pastor Bobo, Brother DJ is host of one of the programs on Time for Awakening, Us Lifting Us. He mentioned about it. I'm going to put you in touch with him after the program, because I think that a lot of the things that the men are doing in reference to the program, because it's a national program, Us Lifting Us, it will be helpful to the brothers and sisters there and their efforts in St. Louis and nationally.
Outstanding.
I'll exchange with you the contact, and you can reach the men directly. You know, we're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to continue the conversation, and you can get involved too by dialing 215-490-9832. 32. That's 215-490-9832. No justice, no profit. Reverend Dinah Tatman and Reverend Ronald Bobo is with us this evening. We'll be right back.
Tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Hey, did y'all see the stuff I posted on my wall?
Nah, it didn't even show up in my news feed.
Man, I'm done with social media. All the injustice and brutality going around, and it's like they're trying to suppress our voice. We're trying to get the message out there, and you can't even share empowerment and what's going on around the country either.
Mm-mm. Nah, don't be dumb with social media, though. It's a tool, and there is a place where we have a voice. It's a Let's Buy Black 365 social network. You do anything you would on any other social network. Post pictures, videos, status updates, share resources and community news. But on Let's Buy Black 365, it's a platform for us and by us to tell our messages.
Whoa, that's like a digital underground railroad.
What's the name of that site again?
It's letsbuyblack365.com.
Yeah, I heard about that. It's all about networking, and you get points, right?
Yeah, the more you network, post, and share, the more points you get. Plus, you get points for posting pictures, sharing information, attending community events, and inviting others to network with you on the app.
Wow, that's all I need to know. I'm gonna go download that app right now.
Now, better yet, let me invite you so I can get some points. It's all about empowerment and solutions, y'all.
Yeah, that's what's up. I'm all in.
Let's do it. Let's share our stories.
Let's buy Black365.com.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. As I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Kennisonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with the pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. Don't let anybody take your manhood. Be proud of our heritage. As somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black, ugly, and evil. Look in your dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. It's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure, high, and clean. But I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, yes, I'm black, I'm proud of it, I'm black and beautiful.
Today, our people can see that we're faced with a government conspiracy. This government has failed us. The senators who are filibustering concerning your and my rights, that's the government. Don't say it, Southern senators. This is the government. This is a government filibuster. It's not a segregationist filibuster. It's a government filibuster. Any kind of activity that takes place on the floor of the Congress or the Senate, that's the government. So this government has failed us. The government itself has failed us. And the white liberals who have been posing as our friends have failed us. And once we see that all these other sources to which we've turned have failed, we stop turning to them and turn to ourselves. We need a self-help program, a do-it-yourself philosophy, a do-it-right-now philosophy. It's already too late philosophy. This is what you and I need to get with. And the only way we're going to solve our problem is with a self-help program. Before we can get a self-help program started, we have to have a self-help philosophy. Black nationalism is a self-help philosophy. What's so good about it? You can stay right in the church where you are and still take black nationalism as your philosophy.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. We're joined this evening with activists and organizers out of St. Louis, the No Justice, No Profit movement. We have Reverend Dinah Tatman and Reverend Ronald Bobo as with us this evening to share with our listening audience of the activity of our people down here in St. Louis in reference to this movement. Reverend Tatman, Reverend Bobo, you know, I just played that clip by Malcolm and Martin, that Malcolm said we need a self-help philosophy. It's a already too late philosophy. You know, these things that our people are involved with in St. Louis need to be activities. Again, I'm going to say it again. It need to be activities that are going on in other cities. Now, some of these activities are going on in other cities, like Philadelphia. But they're not as serious as what's going on in St. Louis. You have across the board leadership that are getting involved. You mentioned the Muslim community. You mentioned several other churches. You mentioned activists like Zaki Baroudi, who's been on this program several times. Mm-hmm. So you're developing a coalition of organizers and activists that are going to bring people along with those individuals. This is going to help make things stronger, and it helps make any movement stronger.
And don't forget that young people that is very viable and important mechanism.
Certainly, yes, because they're
and that's who we do it for.
Okay, because they
that's
might
what
not
I'm saying they.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. We had them present there. What we told them, this was our present to them. The 3 years I've been working on this, I would talk to them off and on, and they would come, you know, some of them would come out to the house. And I said, what I'm doing, because I'm quite clear, the position within this movement, mine is, Sister Soldier told Phil Donahue, when you're a leader, you work from a premise of servant leadership. And what does a servant leader do? they give those that they're serving, because I'm serving them, access, resources, and plans. And so that's what I've always aspired to do, was give them access, because when I go in places, I tell them, and they know when I come, because they recognize I am a part of the protest family. I do go out not as much during this round as I did before, until they call and say, we need to see you. You know, Mom, come on out to the street. We need you to come to this and that. And so I go. Now, Ferguson, I was there every day until my mother got killed. But these are our sons and daughters, and some of our mothers and fathers that are on those streets, because the things that are happening affects them. And how did we bring this coalition together? The ones that were standing with me, and some that weren't there because they couldn't, they have the spirit of community and not individualism. And that's, you have to find those leaders, Richard and Elliot, in your city that have like, truly like minds and like heart. It's not a me thing, it's a we thing. You know, we say that all the time. But when it comes down to the point, it's like fighting a war.
Mm-hmm.
You have different fronts. You know, you have your sergeants, you have your generals, and you have your foot soldiers. But nobody can win a war if everybody is not on the same page. And so you have to find those leaders and those in the church, the community leaders, that don't mind acquiescing to each other. Like when I spoke to my brothers and what they were doing, and I told them I had no problem in joining what we were doing to them. I said, because it's too much work out here for us to try to do anything separate. And so in that spirit of unity is what brought all of those persons together. And we told our protest family, this is our gift to you. We work this, and you guys do what you do. And so that's just like that army. You know, you have your special effects team. You have your, you know, the core team. And you have your, you know, leaders that do the plans. And they do their own plans, too. I mean, some of the things they come up with just blow my mind. And we always support them. So that's what we do as leaders who are supporting them. We give them access, resources, and plans, and to go along with the plans they have themselves. So that's what you have to find in your city. Find those people, and you can find a viable group and the power to do what's needed.
Reverend Timon, Reverend Bobo, talk about, you know, I played that clip, and I thought it was timely with Dr. King. First, because Dr. King's activism, I mean, you know, a lot of, and I'm not even talking about white America, because their opinion of Dr. King really is not a factor in what I'm trying to say. I think some of our people have revisionist history when it comes to Dr. King. If you look at during the time that he was active among our people, it was a segment, and it might have been a large segment of church organizations that did not appreciate or did not go along with what he was doing. I don't think the situation is any different now, because I see how it is in Philadelphia when certain ministers step outside of their ministry, so to speak, and start becoming active in the community. How was it, and I know that you received pushback, how was it among some of your colleagues in the church when you started getting involved really on the ground of what's going on in the community? And I'm saying that to say this. I know I've seen it from published reports, when the verdict came out with this officer that this killer cop, Shockley, I think before the verdict came out, the governor, or either the mayor of St. Louis or the governor of Missouri, went around to church leaders, telling them to keep their people calm.
It was the governor, yes.
Okay. And a lot of our people tend to go along with what white folks say, and a lot of that stems back from slavery. But it's important for our people, and especially the leaders in our community, to develop strategies to move our people forward, similar to what you mentioned, Reverend Tapman, about a war strategy. You know, this government has declared war on black people almost since we've been here, but we have approached them not with a war strategy, but with an extended hand that keeps getting slapped. Because it's two parts to this question, but I want you, both of you, to answer the question of how was it among other church leadership that didn't go along with what you two are doing and proposing?
Can I say that the coalition building is still going on?
Okay.
And that there are some who are, as you always have, wait and see. And so they're going to see what happens. And I think we have to be patient and loving and inviting, even though they may sit back for a while. And some people will jump on the bandwagon when success arrives, of course. And that's okay, too, because we need, and I call it all hands on deck, that we are in the midst of a battle, and we need every person engaged in this battle.
Okay.
And so there are some who are going to wait and see, because there are a variety of people who were saying we need to do something, we need an economic boycott. I don't think many have had the kind of extensive preparation that Reverend Tapman and Zaki also put into working this economic strategy. So there are a lot of people who are wanting to do it. One of the problems is, as you know, sometimes people don't want to play with you if they can't get the credit.
Okay.
And so I always say that you can accomplish anything if you don't care who gets the credit. It's most important that we do this work. Our community is suffering. Reverend Tapman is my daughter in the ministry. I licensed her. I ordained her. But in this, I follow her because I know that she has an anointing for this particular work and that the Lord has put this in her heart. She has worked it. And I told her, don't worry, I'm with you every step of the way. So she'll call me. I said, whatever we're going to do, let's do it together. And but I have no problem following her leadership in this because I know that she has prepared herself for this leadership position.
You know, you walk.
And that's what happened.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Reverend Tapman.
I'm sorry, brother. And that's why when I approached my brother, Minister Donald, because I know successfully the things he had done for the last 2 years. That first year, I was living in a hospital with my dad because I mentioned earlier I lost my mom in a car accident she and my dad were in. And I relocated to Memphis and lived in a hospital with him for 10 months. So that first year, I missed being participating in, but I followed through social media. And so it was important because he had done a piece of what I had been working on for 2 years. He had already put it in action. And I'm always seeking wisdom. And since he had already enacted a piece and was very successful in doing it, I wanted to sit at his seat and learn. And he gave me everything. He gave me statistical data. He gave me support. He met with me for 2 hours on two Mondays straight and just talked and helped strategize. Brother Zaki Baruti and I met here in my home before the press conference when he said, "Sister, I'm doing something too." And I said, "Well, hey, we're going to do this together then." It's too much for us to be separate. And then you have to look at in anything in life, no one culture or thing is going to be monolithic. You're going to have those who are not going to feel comfortable because either it hurts part of their relationships with some of the people we're asking to boycott. And like I said, we took all of that into consideration. And so we respect the fact that they have an opinion, and they have a right to that opinion, just like we have a right to do what we think is best. So we're not throwing anybody away. The only challenge I would have if somebody say that there's no problem with injustices, and then we're going to have a hard conversation. Everybody agrees on that, we're okay. But if anything outside of that, we would have a problem.
You know, both of your response kind of flows right into my next question to you. But, you know, I think that realizing our struggle now, it's all about our babies and the future of our young people moving forward. It should never be about maybe my personal relationship with white businesses or politicians. I think that's when we lose sight of what the caller, Brother DJ, mentioned about some type of cultural base. And that leads me into what I want to mention, and I want you to speak to this, Reverend Tatman, because I know what you've been going through in relation to this, because I see it here in Philadelphia. And if you look nationally, you see that a lot of this struggle that's going on with our people, a lot of women are stepping up to the plate while the men sit back or either look and keep analyzing the problem or look and not say anything. But you see a lot of women step forward. I know that you've received pushback from men that don't want to see a woman stepping forward in what you're doing. Talk about how you deal with that, because it don't seem to be stopping you. But talk about how you deal with that as far as moving around and the struggle that you're dealing with.
Now, brother, I might be an anomaly in this situation. Matter of fact, I know I am.
Okay.
Because my pushback was not so much from the brothers. You saw who was standing with me.
Okay.
You see who was standing with me. And so I have always garnered strength from my elders, male and female. And I want to mention that you said that my mother's in the ministry, as Reverend Dr. Rosalind Denson, Reverend Claudine Murphy, Reverend Brenda Hayes, Dr. Arlene Churn Long, that was my first mother in the ministry. So those women are my mothers and my anchors. I have sisters in the ministry, Reverend Dr. Carla Fry, Reverend Karen Anderson. So my pushback when I went to the brethren, I didn't get that pushback because it's let the work that I do speak for me.
Okay.
Before Michael got murdered, my ministry was the streets. Before I even got licensed and ordained, I was working in prison ministry and shelters and literally on the streets. And so seeing the work that I did in the community with our disadvantaged brothers and sisters, people saw the work that I did before I was called Reverend. And so I think, and a lot of them I helped in their, assisted in their ministries. God gave me the opportunity to sit in some sacred spaces and do some special things. And so when I went to them, because of the work that I've done in the community and on behalf of some of them and their friends, I didn't get so much pushback. So I can speak to that. Why are there more women? Because I looked when I was on the streets of Ferguson for our men and women of the cloth. If I can use this analogy, our men have been castrated. Purposely, this society has put the women in places of leadership over men. And then you have the old guard, those men that were brought up in that adage that, you know, a woman has a place here and a man has a place there. And that's something that's heartbroken, and that's still in some of our churches,
mm-hmm.
where you have women who are sitting with magnificent gifts that are not allowed to operate in those gifts. I just happen to be fortunate where, except for one, and that was change, I never had that, I shouldn't say never, in one instance I had it. But I think after the relationship grew and after seeing the gifts that I offered to the ministry, that changed. So I'm not a good one to speak to that because I haven't gotten that much pushback in that area, but I understand that and stand with my sisters who have, because they not suffer, but it's hard when you have the same passion and the same gift, but not in certain instances being allowed to operate in that, where you have to go out to the streets or you have to go to other areas. And then once they see that gift prosper, some of them, because some of them are not going to change, then the sisters are embraced. But as far as being visible, where are most of our men? Incarcerated. Leadership is aging. And so some of them are changed, and some of them are never, I shouldn't say never, but some of them are holding on to that whole adage that you have your place, and that's where you'll be. But like I said, I'm an anomaly when it comes to that.
Okay. Let me grab a call in here. 267? 267? 267? Are you there, 267? Let's put them back on hold.
If I may.
Go ahead, Richard.
Elliot, can I follow up? A couple of things come to mind, but I'm going to just try to focus, because in the discussion that y'all just had in relationship to just the, and I'm glad to hear, Reverend Tatum, that there wasn't, you haven't been able to experience any opposition internally within the ministry or church community. So I'm in dealing with the issue of opposition. I guess one, where do you perceive the opposition, not necessarily to this campaign because this is direct, but I'm assuming that it's going to continue on. Where is that open for discussion to ask the question, where do you perceive the opposition coming from as a helpful theoretical, I guess, understanding for those of us who are even moving in that direction or even addressing oppositions we see. What do you see in St. Louis to this campaign that y'all are beginning opposition coming from?
Pastor Bubba, would you like to speak
to him? I thought he directly said it to you. I'm sorry.
I mean, either one can answer. I think it's important to recognize opposition is inevitable. So that's why, it's good to, you know, when you talk about strategizing and having a war strategy, one of the things that is important to have is the opposition or understanding. So that's why I'm kind of asking that question, because it seems that there's a deliberate move by the different levels of government to put the black residents of St. Louis in a particular position.
Mm-hmm.
And if that is so, we have to be aware of where that's coming from and what might be the pushback in those areas. And there may be many different levers of that. So that's why I was asking. I mean, if it's not relevant for right now, I can understand.
I think it's relevant. reason out. Diana, go ahead.
Well, and I'll let Pastor Bubba come in. But the pushback mostly is going to be, if you like look at anything, if you're talking from a Christian concept, theological construct of you have your Pharisees, your Sadducees, then you have your people, your revolutionaries, and everybody has their own standard way, blueprint that they think things ought to be done, and this is no different. Most of the pushback that I've gotten from our communities are there's an ensuing, and we all know this, class war, even amongst mm-hmm. ourselves. Hmm. And so that's one of the pushbacks. And the others, of course, well, it's real. The others is, of course, you know, the Caucasian community is pushing back real hard. It's like, okay, you tell us, you know, we're lazy, we ought to do this, we ought to do that, and we devise a plan, and you say, well, that's crazy, why are you doing that? And, you know, my pushback is, I'm not obligated to explain to you why I'm doing what I'm doing. Number one, you're not going to understand it because you've never been oppressed. You've never been in poverty. You've never experienced being shot just because of the color of your skin. And so I'm not obligated to help you understand. I can try to start a conversation, but when you challenge the fact as to why, well, if we had equal access to the economic arm in the city, we wouldn't have to do what we... Why would any citizen that's a part of a synergy that they contribute to have to fight just to get equal services, products, justice, access, on down the line? Why should we have to fight? Other cultures are not fighting, and that's another thing they push back on. Well, everybody else is doing okay. Yes, because they're doing it off of their dime and ours. We're taking our dime back. That's my analogy.
Well, I want to go back to Brother Malcolm, and he talked about there were some folk who worked in the house and some folk who worked in the field. And if Master got sick, they said, boss, we sick? I think there are some people who right now are feeling like, you know, you're messing up the house right now because they've had opportunity to get in good with a few folk, and they have, as always has happened, as is happening in many nations around the world where we have black leadership. They have made coalitions with people in Europe and in various places, and they take advantage of what they can take advantage of and forget about the others who are left behind. I think that the class distinction that we're talking about is real, and that people have forgotten that we're a step away from being right back where we used to be. Because we got two nickels to rub together in our pockets today does not guarantee you're going to have two nickels tomorrow, and that you have to take control of your own economic destiny. I think this is essential. Read an article just this week that said that there's not one African nation right now, not one nation that is led by black people that is thriving, but each one of them is in trouble all over the world. I talked about it today, but right now we are what Frantz Fanon called the wretched of the earth again, that we all over the world have been oppressed, beaten down, and we have no respect from others, and that we have to do something to stand up to regain our footing and our respect in the world. And we have to get on the economic playing field and do that and help ourselves. And we cannot allow someone else to give us two or three nickels, and then we forget about everybody else and act like we're working in the house and forget that the majority of us are working in the field.
It's so interesting. Now, I, in somewhat preparing, and hopefully I have right numbers, I was always, and that's what me and Elliot was talking about, I always kind of raise these questions about, which I'll address, the poverty issue, the what's the job the employment rate amongst African Americans in any area, or what's the unemployment rate amongst people. And I noticed, and I was looking at, say, Boeing has 14,000, it employs 14,000 people. And is Boeing in St. Louis? I didn't really know that. Is Boeing?
Yes, they bought out McDonnell Douglas Corporation.
And Anheuser-Busch has 4,300 employees by this here particular report. they're there also, and it's, these numbers seem high. So my question was, and it hopefully it ties to what you just said, is African Americans involved in these companies that are has a also a solid position in St. Louis? Or
yes, but many of them have hit glass ceilings too.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
and but you know have reached a certain level of income and success, even in this community. Yes, that has occurred, but we lost most of our world headquarters. Anheuser-Busch was bought out by InBev from Belgium. McDonnell Douglas, we lost that headquarters. That was bought out by Boeing, and then others left the city going to Texas, where it was right-to-work states, such as Southwestern Bell, General Dynamics. They all left. And so many jobs, and then TWA was bought out by American. And so we've had a tremendous drain on the economy as it relates to those major corporations, too.
And this is why my last point on this, why going back to the cultural and education piece. And I'm going to put my opinion out. And I know that your campaign will be successful. It sounds like you have all the right ingredients, and it's not important to share your broader strategy. And as Elliot said, we've interacted with Zaki Baruti, so we understand where he's coming from. And I like the idea of proportional representation that he feels that is necessary for us to deal with. I see the wealth, and this goes to something you said, Reverend Tatum. I see wealth is not necessarily just in the dollars, but it also is in the people or those children.
Yes.
And the more we develop them as an economic asset and therefore that cultural understanding and control that, not just, you know, turn it over, the more we will control the future wealth in our community. So I hear you say yes, and that was thrown out there to see if y'all agree with that, because it's important for us to have when you talked about Reverend Babo about African nations, it's important for us to look at this from the perspective of another guest we had on from a sovereign thinking, that we're taking sovereignty over ourselves, not just asking for things. And I just wanted to know if you agree with that as we look this to not just in St. Louis, but Baltimore, Detroit, Philadelphia, Atlanta, all these cities, we're going through the same challenge.
I embrace that wholeheartedly because it's an African proverb that says that the enemy without can't hurt us if we don't have any enemy within. W.E. Du Bois said, he whom you give your money to, you give your power to. And so we have acquiesced by giving our monies to others. And so this economic boycott movement is going to help us in recapturing what we have given away and what we lost. Now, we know it's going to be a challenge because, again, we have to build up the economic engines we already have, our small businesses. St. Louis has the highest population of African Americans in the state of Missouri. And the percentage of businesses that we own in our own communities, I think, is like 2 or 3%. And so we have to build those ones that we have by continuing now to, my mantra is, if we don't find it here, create it. And that's another arm of this movement, is the business arm, business creation, helping those persons that have not been able to get those loans for their businesses, where other nationalities can come in here and put up a convenience store in a month. And or a gas station or a beauty supply shop, but we can't. So if we stop patronizing them and patronizing some of our little small places. A lot of people, you know, out of their homes or just got a little corner here and start building that, we are start rebuilding our wealth. Like you said, it's a collective. It has to be that village concept. I tell people it's like a baby in an incubator. We're putting ourselves here in St. Louis in an incubator. And we're not allowing anybody in, and we're not going out until we have at least done some viable rebuilding and strengthening through our economic arm.
And I would suggest that we think and consider that the educational system, especially the public educational system that we interact with, which is a political system, that we harness the economic dollars. Sometimes I just don't hear us recognize that, and when you say that St. Louis, the African-American population being the size it is, I would assume the educational system that is educating those children is in public schools, charters, or even homeschooling. We should control that economic entity. And it's not just the storefronts or the retailing industry, but from a political perspective, it's the schools. And that's where we shape the future. Because the cultural mechanism, if we dictate and demand not just the dollars, but what is being inputted, then we shape
into our children.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
As an economic engine and as a wealth building activity. That's the I would throw out for us to consider.
Let me grab this call here. 267 error code.
Yes, Brother Elliot.
Yes.
Brother Richard.
Yes, sir.
And your guest. Ma'am, I've been listening to you, and I like what's going on in St. Louis. And what you're saying could be used in every state in America. And you never know what's going on until you hear people like yourself, the other gentleman with you, that call in. And it's really good to know that there are people like you doing something there, and you could be a model for a whole lot of people in the other states once you get everything together there. And I'm happy to know what is going on, because I never thought about what was going on in St. Louis. Like, I don't know what's going on in Bloomington and Indiana or in certain parts of the West Coast. So I like what you're saying. I like when Elliot gets the call in, because I learn something all the time. He has these guests.
Well, thank you.
Well, we appreciate that. And we're hoping, not hoping, we're going to be pushing, because this is a hyper local / national movement, and it goes national by those like yourself, my brother, and our host, who are garnering the information, the formation, and all of that, where it can be replicated. We have no problem in coming and sharing and sitting down, telling people how we do this. One thing my brothers, my Nation of Islam brothers, Minister Donald and Zaki Rudy, blessed me by saying, we all have been working this manually. And you put together the vehicle, the website, and garnering other things.
My question to you, ma'am, are you talking about the Nation of Islam under Louis Farrakhan or under Salas Muhammad?
Yes, the Nation of Islam, but the mosque, Minister Donald Muhammad of Mosque 28 here in St. Louis, Missouri.
Under Minister Farrakhan, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, very good, very good. I'm a member of Temple Number 12 in Philadelphia, and that's good. I see you working. That's great.
Yes, yes. We're all one. It's too much work that needs to be done, and too much pain that we have to now try to soothe and to offer some type of semblance of normalcy and humanity, just plain old humanity, to our community. When you're constantly being dehumanized and devalued and then traumatized, you know, something, you have to do something. And we've tried everything else as viable citizens, and nothing else has garnered anything. And so we know when in a capitalistic society, the only thing they understand is money.
That's correct, man.
Thank you for your call, Tim.
Indeed.
Reverend Tatman, Reverend Bobo, before we kind of wind things down, talk about the, because I know that you've been probably keeping raw numbers of the progress that has been going on since the movement started. If you want to share with us some of the numbers, because I know that you know it's been effective. And also, talk about some of the businesses that has been targeted locally and nationally, and the reasons why. But first, talk about the some of the numbers and what they look like so far.
Well, so far, on our website, for instance, we put this up website up on early Thursday morning, about 2 something in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
But since between Thursday and Friday, we already had 6,000 hits to the website.
Very, very good.
Okay.
It's over 10,000 now. It's over 10,000 now. And okay, we have so far over 100 persons signing up to become involved. And before the website went up, for our foot soldiers, the protest family, I love them, I want to continually call out their names, they had already affected the economy by extracting $17 million from this economy.
Okay.
Police overtime, because they kept them very busy, over $4 million. And then the Galleria Mall, because the strategy was, when the days you go, you shut them down, they lose money, as well as people just stop coming out. We're used to it in our community, stop coming out because they knew the protesters. They didn't know when they were going to show up and where. And so they have been very strategic as well. I don't know all the time where they're going until they tell me to come here, and I come there, and then we go somewhere else. So $17 million. And now, it doesn't take a whole lot of them. Four or five of them show up somewhere, and people just start shutting the doors and locking up the businesses because
good,
they think, all the rest of them are coming. So their direct action, that's how much they've done just with direct action. And we just, announced on Thursday the boycott. So if you can imagine direct action being effective by extrapolating $17 million from a local economy, that speaks a lot. Mm-hmm. Now, the entities that we chose was the Galleria Mall. That is a business that's number one tourist attraction here in St. Louis, Missouri. And like you said, we strategized like a war. They housed 165 of some of the most prominent eateries and retailers. They also are the number one tax generator for one of the prominent communities here in St. Louis. And also, when the protesters first went out, they were met with egregious enforcement of the law, they call it, but excessive force to the nth degree, where people were just snatched like you do animals.
Okay.
When you hunting and the hunter just stands around, and when a herd comes by, they just start snatching people. They were snatching our children, our clergy, and so that's our ground zero. Like for Michael, when he got murdered, the Canfield Apartments was our ground zero. So Galleria Mall is ground zero. Target, why did we choose Target? Number one, they are one of the largest investors in the private prison industry. Also, Target now owns the rights to Rosa Parks' name. Not her family, Target.
I didn't know that.
Did you know
what?
That?
No, I didn't know that.
Uh-huh, yes. And so they have closed most of their stores in our communities after coming in and like I said, raping our wealth. They have closed them. Then the Snooks Grocery Store, which is a homegrown family grocery store. We chose them because they closed 5 profitable locations, which were located in poverty-ridden communities, some of them. They closed them with no reason and relocated after they extrapolated our wealth and used it to build their family dynasty into more affluent areas. They moved 2 of them in central locations. Like I tell people, it wasn't a benevolent move, it was a business move. And 2 strategic locations where those stores are the top, two of their top generators, where folks now have to catch cabs, 2 buses and all that to get to the grocery stores. And those places where they moved those stores, gentlemen, are now food deserts. And they are number one donator of the Republican Party in the grocery industry. So that's why we chose them. The other, Phillips 66 gas station, where an attendee shot an African-American man in the back of his head for allegedly stealing a $1 bag of candy, which he didn't have. Shot him in the back of the head. And so the last one, Del Mar Loop, which is one of the greatest cities in the nation. It's $55 million have been spent to build a trolley system that's just going to go 2.2 miles into Forest Park, which is one of the top parks in the nation. And if that's the community I was telling you about. If you go 2 miles down, our community looks like Iraq, but they found TIF dollars for that, new market tax credits. They got money from the Federal Transportation Development, as private money too, but $55 million for a trolley that's going to go 2.2 miles, but you can't put up streetlights, which is a basic safety mechanism for, you know, a poor community, any community. And when they did that, they took a whole part of the street, which displaced a lot of businesses that were there, African-American businesses, and then the rates were raised where those who tried to stay eventually had to move out. So that's why we chose them.
Okay.
Strategically.
All right. Well, I want, I'm going to be in touch with you, Reverend Tatman, and I'll probably be in touch with Reverend Bobo through you to get constant updates or maybe monthly updates on some things going on. The doors will always be open that mm-hmm. both of you or one of you could come on and talk with the listening audience, share with the listening audience the progress of some of the movements. And I know this is going to spread to other cities because you have cities now. Philadelphia is trying to get something like this started, but it's when you got black bourgeois involved and some African-American politicians that have other things on their mind beside the community, sometimes it's hard to get traction among the people because they're looking at symbols, and sometimes the symbols is not right. So it's going to take a little work in some of these other cities. But I, along with Brother Richard, echo the same sentiments that I know that our brothers and sisters in St. Louis is going to be successful in what you're doing.
Thank you for that.
Thank you, brother. And if you would allow us to give the website.
Certainly. Any information that you want to give, yeah. Anything you want to give, okay. The floor is yours.
It's www.nojusticenoprofitsalltogether.us. And also on there, brothers, you can go and you can, because there's a tracker on it that tells you how many hits when you open it up and go down to the bottom. It'll tell you how many hits are there. And what I would commit to doing is we make it a point to talk probably on a monthly basis. We would love to sit down with you all and strategize because you mentioned, you know, the politicians and other peoples. This is a grassroots movement. And see, that's that's the difference, maybe, and maybe the caveat and the nugget we can give other cities, grassroots. Start with your grassroots people and those churches that are already doing community outreach. See, the churches that were represented up there with me, they already in the community doing outreach. Those are the ones. That's your team. Because they have a passion for the people, and that's what you need.
You're here.
Wow. And give that again. Is there any phone number or anything that you want the listening audience to know, Reverend Tammy?
Well, the phone number that's tied to the website.
Okay.
And then you all have my personal one that you.
I don't want to give that. That's
other
why.
Persons.
Mm-hmm.
No, but not on. No, not mm-hmm. on the air. But I'm saying for those leaders who want to start movement like this, and the caveat again, those churches and community leaders that are on the ground. The ones that are feeding the homeless, the ones that are going to the prisons, the ones that have after-school programs, those are your passionate ones. And those are the ones that you can galvanize around one core because they're not thinking about me-ism. They're thinking about the people and the collective. That's your team.
Reverend Tatum. Reverend Tatman, Reverend Bobo, I want to thank you for being with us. Again, we'll touch base every so often, every month or so and get updates, and we'll move forward from there. And I'll put you in touch with Brother DJ. And also, it's another sister that has a program that will be coming on to Time for Awakening, Let's Buy Back 365.com. I know she'd be a resource and be anxious to talk with you.
Yes.
We'll be in touch soon.
Okay, brother.
Thank you.
Man. Take care now.
May I say this before we go?
Yes.
God bless you and the work that you are doing. And my prayer is that God will increase your influence in Philadelphia and across the nation, that your radio program and the station will be blessed, because this is the time we need the hand of God upon us. We've been up against something for a long time. Black Wall Street, they burned down. They lynched and killed wherever there was prosperity. And so I'm praying that God will bless this movement and bless those who are trying to help this movement to go forward. So may I say God bless you and thank you so very much for what you are doing and for the opportunity to share what we are doing.
We'll be in touch, and thank you.
Ashe, brothers.
All right.
Peace. Bless you, brother.
Richard,
yes.
Interesting conversation.
Oh,
with two activists. You know, I'm critical sometimes of our churches that just want to take advantage of the communities and just be in the places on Saturday and Wednesdays and Sundays. But when you have ministers out there that care about the communities that are really out there, that are really out there, then you got to give credit to them.
It's so important to see this type of development. And I have to say, though, it seems that St. Louis has the right external pressure the internal.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? They spoke as if that city is almost not, and I said under siege at first, but that I wanted to come back to that point about that law in relationship to the policeman. I mean, you can't look at him.
Well, listen, that's not the first time we heard that. Did I keep a Rudy said something similar?
That's almost like you got to bow your eyes and walk past them, bow your head eyes when you come in front of it, and don't get close.
Yeah, well, that's what happened to Michael Brown. That's why that cop came up, because he was looking at him. That's how that whole interaction, I do remember that. That's how that whole interaction started. Reckless eyeballing. That's the same thing that a lot of ISIS was lynched for.
Right. And that was supposed to be in relationship to dealing with white women, as a, you know. Now the police then took the what the position of white women in relationship to in St. Louis. Wow. And not saying that it won't occur other places. Yeah. But it's to be able to put that in law from a, I guess that's a local law, is profound and effective.
You know, we're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll spend a few more minutes. Because, Richard, you know, Reverend Tatman and Reverend Bobo mentioned something early in the conversation when they were talking about something that you said. And they said the strategy among a lot of these European investors coming in and gentrifying these cities is to first blight the areas.
Right.
And then, you know, come in with investment and all. But they first have to blight. That's their plan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he kind of took the words out, because I didn't know he was going to even talk about that. But I got something I want to share with the listening audience. And it's in reference to Detroit. And the only reason I chose Detroit, because Detroit had the largest population of blacks than any city in the country, any major city. So what they've done in Detroit, they're going to do in other areas. They're doing it in other areas.
They're doing it, right.
But I want to share with you some information, share with the listening audience. We're going to take a brief break. And when we come back, you know, when they was talking about the main opposition, because they already said that they know that it is opposition coming from Caucasians.
Mm-hmm.
But they talked about the opposition coming from our people.
Mm.
And they mentioned the ones that are benefiting. Reverend Bobo talked about, drew the analogy of Malcolm, talking about the ones in the house.
Mm-hmm.
So we see that here we go again.
Mm. This is a global reality, you know. They call it, you know, that bourgeois, national bourgeois community, and they do have something that they have to, they're trying to protect, you know. That puts them in the way.
Yeah, I mean, they're trying to protect something of themselves. That's not anything. Wow. You know, we're going to take a brief break. When we come back, I'll play this selection here that's dedicated towards what we've been talking about. And some of those bourgeois, just let the music will speak for itself. But we'll be right back. In the final portion of the program, if you want to get involved, we'll go in open forum before we kind of wind things down. You can give us a call at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Time for Awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Thank you.
from antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And Brother Richard.
Yes, sir.
I think a lot of our people have developed that philosophy based on European greed of money. I mean, when Kenny Gamble and Leon Huff wrote that song, I guess they were almost like prophets to describe, you know, the mindset that have taken over. I mean, it's always been a part of European ethos, but they have taken over the mindset of our people that have been very detrimental to us as a community and as a black people or a black nation, is the mindset of chasing after this dollar like that. Sure, we know we need dollars to function in this society, but to develop a level of greed where you'll do anything to get some dollars, that has really torn our community, torn the fabric of our community apart. And that's part of the mindset that we got to get rid of.
There you go. I agree. And it gets down to that value. And though I may seem that education is a panacea, I don't necessarily say that's it. It's controlling the environment, which controls the information flow in and out. That's the panacea to me. And that's one thing that we have been in this here notion of trying to be in an open society. We're the only ones that's been open. Everybody else has been closed, you know, and then telling us we need to integrate or we need to persuade them to do right by us. And then we go about trying to do it, which is, you know, another side of the something that I just really can't fathom at this point. But I agree, it's, you know, that love of money will make it keep this game going. Or at least they say it's money. I still say it's in the controlling of the population that you have.
Yeah, that's what it basically boils down to. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, before we got a call on hold, but I want to share this with the listening audience because I put it on the Time for Awakening Facebook page, and it's an article out of Black Enterprise, and I'll read the title. It says, "New $5 million program helps black developers rebuild Detroit." And the caption says, "African-American real estate developers in Detroit will get financing and training opportunities to grow their business courtesy of this $5 million program." And it's put forth by J.P. Morgan and Chase Bank. It's $5 million influx to African-American developers. Now, on the surface, some folks might say, well, wow, that's great. You know, it's money going, it's a lot of money. Banks is supposedly given for African-American business development. $5 million. Now, let's look at that. Let's go a little deeper into that picture, especially with the banks and some of the other people that have come into Detroit. Now, keep in mind that figure, the $5 million. Richard and the listening audience, just be a little patient. I want to read something to you, but kind of follow along with what I'm going to read. This comes from a published report. It says Dan Gilbert, and that this guy, Dan Gilbert, owns the Cleveland Cavaliers basketball team and probably some others. Dan Gilbert is not a politician, a community leader, or an activist, but a billionaire who has personal economic interest in seeing the city of Detroit come back in a particular way. J.P. Morgan and Chase isn't directly paying for a thicket of new apartments or a cohort of newly trained truck drivers, but is putting up money to make those efforts possible. The bank has committed $150 million to the project, while deploying a rotating team to help Detroit's reformist mayor, Mike Duggan, and local nonprofits decide which neighborhoods and industries to saturate. It's those stakeholders who ultimately decide where the money goes. We have the intelligence that larger organizations may not have, says Clemens, the Detroit market lead of Capital Impact Partners, one of the bank's teammates. Now, keep in mind, I'm going to talk about this Capital Impact Partners later on. And that intelligence is steering funds to businesses that wouldn't otherwise qualify for them for reasons that as simple as inexperience or as complicated as Detroit's legacy of racial discrimination. The two-year, $500,000 investment by J.P. Morgan is a part of the $150 million investment in Detroit. The bank in 2014 committed $100 million to the city for 5 years. This year, their investment is $50 million. Now, I'm going to continue on, but keep in mind some of these figures by J.P. Morgan already. They've invested so far $150 million into Detroit. This year, they've invested another another $50 million. They've invested $150 million so far. But they and Chase have teamed up to give black businesses $5 million. Mm. Now, I'm no mathematician, but something is wrong with that percentage. And Chase is touting this two-year $500,000 investment in minority businesses. Two-year $500,000 investment. $500,000. And they've already invested over $200 million into this city. So they really don't want to bring any black businesses there. Little bit of money is just enough so some of these bourgeois politicians can take care of their friends. Now, let me continue on. Quicken Loans is the largest online lender, and Dan Gilbert moved the company's headquarters from the suburbs to downtown Detroit in 2010, bringing thousands of young white professionals with him. The state gave Gilbert's company a $50 million tax break to move. Since then, he's taken advantage of the city's emptiness, buying 70 buildings at rock bottom prices, including property from the city. The Bates Garage, which sits on prime land in the heart of Detroit, is now likely to become a mixed-use development worth hundreds of millions of dollars. The city sold it to Dan Gilbert for $1.5 million. The city's water department is also planning on shutting off over 70,000 past due accounts to make up for its budget shortfall. This means 43% of Detroit homes could be without water in the coming months. Now, I'm detracting from the article now. When they shut off 70,000 accounts due to that's 70,000 homes, Richard.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, which means 43% of Detroit's homes could be without water. And I remember when we had one of the activists on from Detroit, they said when your home is without water, then it's easily condemned and torn down.
Right.
So we can see how all of this is pushing blacks into a certain area.
Mm-hmm.
Marathon Petroleum, for example, received a $175 million tax break to expand their mammoth refinery in one of the city's poorest, most polluted neighborhoods, Delray, to process tar sand oil. This tax break only brought the area 15 new jobs. And perhaps the most egregious example of this public-private profiteering is the new Detroit Red Wings Stadium. Mike Itch, the pizza billionaire, received an estimated public subsidy of $284.5 million when he decided to build the new stadium and entertainment district up from a block from the old arena. This arena will be demolished at the cost of $6 million paid for by the city. The city will then hand over the land to one of the creditors as a part of its bankruptcy deal. So the city gave a $175 million tax break to Marathon Oil to take over one of the city's poorest, most polluted neighborhoods, black, and gave this guy, Mitch Ish, some pizza billionaire, $284.5 million to build a new stadium and a tax break and all these tax breaks. Now, this Marathon Petroleum only brought 15 jobs to Detroit. Now, those are private investors in the city, along with these banks that are dealing with multi-millions of dollars. But they pass along to Black Enterprise, and it's supposed to be some type of badge of honor that they want to cultivate Black businesses and give them $5 million. Now, let me continue on. Detroit is getting another 88. Here we go, Richard, because this ties in with that conversation you had earlier. And this is where the federal government come in. See, prior to this, I was just reading about private investors, Dan Gilbert and some of his other brethren. Now, here's where the government comes in. Detroit is getting $88 million for blight flight from the federal government. In 2016, while at a $17.6 million boost is on the way for Flint, a state housing official said Wednesday that they're giving $17.5 million to Flint. For blight removal also, for blight flight. They didn't say blight removal, blight flight. The U.S. Treasury Department approved the allocation under its hardest hit fund program. In total, Michigan is awarded $188.1 million in federal blight dollars in April as a part of the latest round of funding. Okay, so the city gave them $188.1 million for blight flight. That's what they call it.
Mm-hmm.
Besides Detroit and Flint, $11.7 million in blight funds were sent to other communities throughout a competitive application process, official says. Other dollars were directed towards foreclosure prevention and homeowner assistance. You're right. In 2017, Detroit Mayor Mike Duggan said the announcement of the state's share of the $2 billion in addition to the hardest hit fund, the $7.6 billion program was set to expire at the end of 2017. It will help the city continue tearing down blighted structures. The program has already devoted $130 million to Detroit for blight removal. Michigan originally received $498 million from the hard hit fund when the program was announced in 2010 in response to the housing crisis, which led to the unprecedented home price decline and high unemployment. The $74.5 million brings Michigan's total to $572.5 million in federal funds that have been allocated so far for blight removal. Now, keep in mind that this blight removal program started in 2010. And I read earlier that Dan Gilbert first moved to that city in 2010. So we see that all of this is working together. And in 2010, Obama was president and allocated these funds there to do what is it, to remove Black folks from Detroit. Talking about blight removal. That means Black removal. Now, I'm going to finish this up because I'm coming down the home stretch here. Because we already talked about all this money. We talked about the private funds and then all these federal funds that came into the city for blight removal. Now, let's look at this Detroit Venture Partners, who we read earlier was involved with Chase. Detroit Venture Partners is an American venture capital firm that funds and seeds early stage companies. Their headquarters is in Detroit, Michigan. It was founded November 1st, 2010. The founders was Dan Gilbert and Bryant Hermelin. Dan Gilbert, the same Dan Gilbert that came there in 2010. He also has this venture capital firm that he's president of that all this money is flowing towards. And look who's the only black on his, and he's in an advisory position, Irvin Magic Johnson. Washington, D.C., in August 26, 2014, Capital Impact Partners. Now, we read them earlier because they've been teaming with J.P. Morgan. Capital Impact Partners today received $4 million award from the U.S. Federal Treasury Community Development Financial Corporation. Compact Impact Partners will use this grant to expand its strategic efforts and support increased access to quality health care and education, healthy foods, affordable housing, and dignified aging alternatives for underserved communities. Capital Impact Partners will use $2 million of the grant it received as part of the FA award to leverage other private and philanthropic capital investments, enabling the organization to increase its ability to disperse financing to underserved communities. I mean, they keep using black people as pawns. They're not dispersing any of this money to black people. Now, two paragraphs left. The $2 million that Capital Impact Partners receives through this grant will be used to support healthy food financing initiatives in Michigan, including support for independent grocers, local wholesalers, mobile fresh food marts that provide healthy food for low-income areas. In partnership with J.P. Morgan and Chase, we are working to revitalize Detroit through such initiatives as our $30 million Detroit Neighborhood Fund that supports financing for multifamily residential properties, mixed-use real estate, and grocery stores. Other examples of our work include supporting two local entrepreneurs in their efforts to rebuild the historic Forest Arms building that has sat vacant since a devastating fire in 2008. We will see a new life form out of these houses, out of this housing for 70 families in addition to commercial space and local businesses. So they're touting that they're investing all this money in the black community, and they used it through that fresh food, healthy food initiative that the Obamas, Michelle Obama, put forth during their reign in the presidency. All of this money used towards other things, used to kick black people out of Detroit, take their homes, blight removal, a public-private partnership to remove black people from Detroit. Now, that's just an example. Detroit is a test case and an example towards all of these other cities nationwide. The reason I read it about Detroit, because Detroit has the largest population of black folks of any of these major cities. And you see what was in the plans for, and still in the plans for Detroit, to remove black people from Detroit. Blight removal. Don't even, they don't even put a face to it. You're blight and you need to be removed. I just wanted to share that information, man, because when I read that stuff about some $5 million given to black businesses, and off the surface, black people say, wow, you know, we got five. But look at all these hundreds of millions of dollars that have been invested in this city. And they talking about giving black folks $5 million. That's just enough for these cronies and their friends to benefit from. Magic Johnson to share with some of his buddies and some of these other blacks that politicians or whoever that can help these whites get in Detroit and take over and get these buildings for $1.5 million that they're going to turn to multi-billion-dollar business enterprises. That's just reward money for them, $5 million. That doesn't start any black businesses in black neighborhoods, $5 million.
Yes, it's. I mean, it just continues to show, and this is not a, obviously it's not a plan that just was put in place, right? You know.
It's been in place, we could see that the Obamas was involved in it. They knew what was going on. They sent hundreds of millions of dollars to Detroit,
and it had to go in even before them, because didn't Detroit go bankrupt?
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
So this, you know, and the reason I'm raising that, because when we look at these moments here, and now they're just, everybody's being cashed in, right? They're getting their cash or still, because that seed money compared to the money that's going to be made off of that.
I know it.
When you raise those numbers, that money compared to the amount of money that is going to be made in another 10 to 20 years is still like $5 million. You know, when that's for the federal and the state and the local government. But I think the important thing for us is the point of that's a 20 to 30 year plan that we're seeing the end of the beginning stage.
Mm-hmm.
And as you're saying, it includes even a black president being involved, which probably ain't had no, I mean, that's probably done at a bureaucratic level.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
You know, that's one of those persons who got 20-year government service and done worked their way up, and that policy has already been in the hopper when they got there, and they're just doing their job getting their pay. $60,000, $80,000, $100,000, and ready for retirement.
Mm-mm-mm.
Which only, you know, which we need to see as the example of when we're talking about our initiatives, that they have to be long-term initiatives.
And they have to be war strategies. Look, I mean, if this is not declaring war on the black community in Detroit, and I'm just saying Detroit, this is in all these cities. If they're not declaring war on the black community, then what is? I'm going to go back to this paragraph. The city water department, this Detroit City Water Department, is also planning on shedding off 70,000 past due accounts. That's 70,000 homes, because you only got one bill for each home.
Mm-hmm.
70,000 past due accounts to make up its budget shortfall. This means 43% of Detroit homes could be without water in the coming months. That means then your house is condemned. You're part of that blight removal. You black that can't pay your water bill and without a job, your house is taken and you're out. You're part of that blight removal. And then they'll take your land and give it to, Mammoth Petroleum, that received $175 million tax break to expand Mammoth Refinery in the city's poorest, most polluted neighborhood, Delray. Come on here, man. This is war. This is war. What else is it? This ain't no friend of the black community. This is declaring war on black people and black communities nationwide. And some of our people, they sitting and listening to Steve Harvey laughing and joking every day. And Tom Joyner, like everything's a laugh and a joke. Well, we better get serious. Our people better get serious. Let's go to the phones. 646. 646.
Yeah, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard.
Hey, listen,
you know, the reality is that they haven't even done anything about the water in Flint.
Right.
So
I know it.
Wait
a minute.
Anything else?
They sent hundreds of millions. Well, so far, I don't want to go back on these papers here. They spent multi-millions of dollars sending to Flint for blight removal. So they don't care about the water. Yeah, they're just going to remove black people from Flint. And then they'll deal with the water.
But they've been doing that ever since they started closing down the auto stores,
mm-hmm.
the auto manufacturing plants. the everything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Trump's been in that situation for the last 20 to 30 years. So, I mean, this is nothing new. I mean, you know, the thing that most black people don't realize is that all of these things have been in place for the last 20 or 30 years. I mean, they've sat in back rooms planning this out. They've strategically going about the business of figuring out how they was going to do it and doing it and having the assistance of people like Obama and Negroes like Magic Johnson. I mean, think about it. Anytime Magic Johnson could support Wells Fargo and places like Rent-A-Center, you know he's a piece of sugar, honey, iced tea. You know, regardless of his wealth and, you know, him being a sports icon and all that, fundamentally, when you look at who he really is, you know, when you take the mask off, he's a piece of sugar, honey, iced tea. To the core, because he will sell black folks out for the highest dollar. And then again, you can look at his son and what he's produced. So, I mean, I just look at that. And that's all I need to know. You know what I mean? Anytime you produce a degenerate like that, I can't never respect you as a man. And it's just keeping it real. But, you know, what I really wanted to say was a continuation of Friday in regards to old Donald Brazil. Let me tell you something. People like Donald Brazil are enemies of black folks. And you're going to have Negroes like Roland Martin and some of these others come to the defense of this woman. You know, and the sad thing is, that she's the type of Negro who will sell black folks out and not get paid for it. That's the tragedy of all of it.
Didn't she already know that?
And didn't get a dime for it. But other people were making millions on consulting fees and all of that. But you notice how Negroes never get paid by these crackers. But they won our votes. But we protect them way more than we protect our own. But now we're supposed to be sympathetic towards her and run to her defense and protect her black bond. Oh, man, Lord have mercy. I would love to get her on the radio and tell her a few things of what I think about her black bond. I would love to.
I seen a picture with her where she had her black power fist up.
Oh, yeah, because now, you know, the cracker really don't have no use for it. You see, she was making that $100 or more on CNN, and they got rid of her black behind. So now she's in a situation to where as she got to make some money. So I guess she figured the best way she can make some money is she going to throw Mammy Hillary under the bus.
Yeah, write a tell-all book.
Hillary Clinton have made so much money off of Negroes. She could care less if one Negro tried to make some money off of her. She should take it as a badge of honor. She should give that Negro some money and go and catch her, take her out to lunch, feed her, and then stand up, walk next to her, and pat her on the head, and tell her, Negro, I taught you well. Proud of you. Now get your ass up and get out of here. I'm finished with you. That's probably the way
she's being treated. But one thing you did raise, Jay, when you raised that Friday, that made me think, you know, Hillary, and even though she may be, you know, because the thing that stuck out to me was where she said that with the money that Hillary put in the Democratic Party gave her the right to control the party. I mean, she basically bought out. It ain't just Donna. All them people who are involved in the Democrats, they knew where their money was coming from. They knew they wasn't raising enough money.
Mm-hmm.
And they knew Hillary and them was putting the money in there. And then for doing that, Hillary and them dictated what they wanted to occur from the Democratic Party.
But that's what you're supposed to do, though. Well,
for your money.
You know, yeah, but that's what you're supposed to do. The thing is that she didn't have the decency to be honest about it. See, that's where people have a problem is because, you know, the millennials and the Bernie supporters, they don't know the game like the rest of them do. And they thought that they were playing semi-up and up. But they didn't know that Clinton and Schultz and the rest of them had the thing already rigged up. You know what I mean? So now what's going to happen is they're going to pay the piper for it because you're not going to get the necessary support from those millennials and the rest of them ever again because they're bitter. And they're going to stay bitter because they're just the nature of the white folks. That's how white folks get down.
Well, I don't know. I hear you. I was wondering, will those millennials go back to the Democratic Party? Because now they said, I told you so. And now they think it's going to, because Bernie was going to bring them back in, right? So now.
No, I don't think he was going to bring them back in because you got to bring somebody back in on that level by being able to offer them something. The Democratic Party has nothing to offer no one.
Well, I mean,
they have nothing.
Right. Right. Well, none of them have. I mean, for working, for indebted, for the elderly, for the sick, for the working poor, neither one of them parties have anything to offer. But what I believe I'm seeing, you know, and it might just be me looking at it, you know, cockeyed, is that these people, and you mentioned about the millennials, they are operating off of a level of faith that the people who control the system don't operate off of. They are operating off of a level of goodwill, of hope, of prayer that the people who control this thing don't operate off of. And
yeah, but it's getting too bad. It's getting too bad, Richard. And the thing is, if this nut job in the White House is able to get this tax bill passed, it's going to really be even more crazier. You see, I mean, there's just too many things in play these days that just make it more crazier. I see they had a white boy today in Texas that done got him 20 bodies. I didn't even check to see if they were black or white that he killed. You know what I mean? I'm hoping that they were some cockatoos.
Well, I think that they probably were white because when they showed the picture of the church, outside the church, they got a big flagpole and it had an American flag and some type of Texas state flag or I don't know, it looked like a federal flag.
Okay.
So I kind of figured that wasn't a black church.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to figure out what is wrong with these crackers, man? Why they doing all of this white-on-white violence, man? But it's going to be real interesting to see what old Trumpy Trumpster got to say.
Whether he called him an animal. He called that other guy an animal. He called that other guy animal, said that he wanted to send him to Guantanamo, and he gave him the death penalty.
Is he just a good American, you know, that was under drugs or something like that and was upset because his girlfriend, you know, was doing a thing with a donkey or something?
But you notice that they're not saying that these people are terrorists.
Nah, they never use. See that word is not for anybody that is of the pale skin complexion, man.
And born, you know, born and raised in America. When at the same time they're saying the condition. Because on one hand, they're saying that the drug addicts who are, they're not drug addicts, right? They're public health. You know, they're not drug addicts.
Public health safety.
Yeah, right. But
public health safety.
But, I mean, and the reason why, because, you know, and looking at what the sister said about St. Louis, because you don't see those kind of legal, those kind of laws being placed in white areas. They ain't even looking for these guys. You would think they're telling us that they can be able to find terrorists, quote unquote, right, in this country to prevent them from doing the act. And they got all kind of agencies operating. I just heard that in New York, right, New York City, that police department is a terrorist, you know, is a terrorist, a global terrorist new police department. It ain't just a police department.
Yeah.
You know?
But you know,
they can find a terrorist with that type of apparatus, but they can't find these guys.
Yeah. But you know something, man? The brothers and sisters in St. Louis, they the new vanguard, man. What they doing is what we're going to have to do to be able to move forward as a people, man. Because if we're looking for black leadership to take us anywhere, to move us forward, it's not going to happen, man. The black caucus is not going to do anything to liberate us as a people, man. It's just not going to happen, man. Because they have no vision for us. Their whole thing is predicated on, you know, this whiteness, being part of whiteness and trying to get white people to treat us fairly. You know what I mean? And it's just not going to happen. It's no reason for it to happen. It's no reason for you know, in all truthfulness, and let's be honest about this. There's no reason at this present day in this country for white people to treat us right. Why should they? What do they get out of it? They could get whatever they look to get from us from other people who have a more sense of loyalty to them, who are looking to be just a part of their thing than we are. Who are basically a little more loyal to them and who aren't as much of a perceived threat than we are, in all truthfulness, but and who have a little more love for them than we do, deep down.
If we do, as you say, if St. Louis or is that Mississippi where Chuck Way is, I'm not sure about Newark. If we do those things, in my mind, then we become the terrorists, the American homegrown terrorists. Because it's already understood that the black, and as I perceive it, y'all may correct me, but they've already always said, even since 9/11, that the American Muslim community is a terrorist community.
Mm-hmm.
They misdiagnosed the events. They tried to put it on the nation two times. Then they tried to put it on the gangs one time. So if we truly reflect that we are taking self-control and then publicly demonstrate that, and St. Louis, I mean, that law, I mean, it just, it's still, you know, Elliot, it just, boggles my mind. You can't look at a cop without breaking. I mean, you look in his eye, and he can lock you up.
That's crazy.
And that's a law on the book.
Yeah, that's crazy.
You hear me?
That's crazy. That's like back in slavery.
Yeah.
I gotta run, fellas. Talk to y'all next week. All right.
All right, Jay.
That, you know, so that's what. But did you know, Elliot, in what you presented and what Jay said about Donna, the question still comes to us, even as we're looking at it, because what we keep saying is, this is their 20, 30, 40-year plan, that which means that it went through two generations of people who retired to get to the point where we're watching right now, whether we knew then or not, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do we have now in our written or unwritten books 20, 30, 40-year plan? whether whatever city, even looking at Philadelphia, do we, I mean, who is and where? I mean, we could say city planning, these guys that are sitting there who are white and women are sitting there, they putting these plans down. We could say in these universities, in these different departments, they're putting these, they're writing these plans down. We could say in these different offices. But where do we say, based off of what we know is true, that we're putting in play, and it's there, whether it's written or unwritten, this 20, 30, 40-year plan, not just reacting and pulling something together in the now, but it's a continuation of. Can we say that, or is that a question, an appropriate question?
Well, listen, I think it's a good question. I know that that is plans out there, that people have been working on plans. I mean, we got our ancestors to pull from because, the pastor talked about the writings of Frantz Fanon. You got a lot of our ancestors that had vision for our people. It's just that we got to incorporate these things, put them together. You know, I like what's happening there because, you know, when you see people working across the board and kind of tabling, like Michael said, putting the religion in the closet, when you got people that's come out saying, listen, we got to work together. You got a Baptist minister, that's a woman, working with a brother from the mosque, an imam from the mosque, working with the Universal African People's Organization, Zakiba Rudy. I mean, you got a lot of people working together there, Richard.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And that's showing a mentality there where somebody's saying, like, well, it's no more big eyes and little U's. We got to look at our children and the future of our people. So they're tabling, but you still got some that's holding on to that old foolishness. You heard them admit it. Mm-hmm. But they're going to keep on working. So, you know, and I got full faith that thing is going to work out because mm-hmm. you got sincere people that's about doing something.
And that's important and powerful. And there's lessons we'll continue to learn. I just when you read the article about how the plan of being able in Detroit to, you know, using the political machinery and the different financial institutions, they're working in unison to truly move Black people. And I think it's you that
to move someone else.
Where do they go?
Yeah.
Where are they going?
They don't care. They just are moving you out. They don't care where you go.
And for them, that's not their concern or their question. But for us, it should be.
And if you
need to know, even for Philadelphia, where is the people going that's being pushed out of South Philly? Where are they going? North Philly, where are they? I mean, are they going down south? Yeah. Now, when you go down south with no money, now it's one thing you're going to go down there and you can buy them homes, which everybody's saying you can get more spaces cheaper. But you can't go down there with no money. You got to have at least a car. You don't need a car here. You need a car there. So, you know, again, it's not for them, but for us in relationship to how this thing continue to play out. Because what about if they do go to camps or are placed in camps? We used to call them projects. We wouldn't know. I remember when they were taking guys off the street. They call them the homeless people. They was taking them to California, putting them in some compound or something to get the homeless off the street. So these are questions in relationship to our future development that we see what's happening, or at least the end product of it. And to what degree and how many places are involved in it. But shooting, you know, and we even see how many people on the other within, as they said on the Reverend Tatum said, you know, in relationship to, and it's interesting how we try to be polite, right? We try to be politically correct in relationship to not calling out those black middle class people, right? Who are the opposition.
They basically called them out.
Yeah. Which was strange, you know, and I hate to do this, but strange to me, because at the same time, it's them same people who bought those $300,000 homes. Didn't they say $200,000 homes?
Mm-hmm.
That lost value.
That upside down, yeah. Yep.
But they're going to, you know, they're going to be still oppositional?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is the level of, you know, the internal things we have to deal with, because on the street, that's them young people who don't have a home yet. Some may not be working, who have to deal with the interaction with the police, with these kind of laws in place, that we have to provide the support for. And I say we, because I don't think that we should look at it that this is St. Louis, or this is Detroit, or this is New York, or Mississippi, or Alabama, because we should be looking at or Louisiana. We're all in this together.
This is us.
We should
be, yeah, that's, you know, yeah, that's how we should be looking at it.
You know, so when we're looking, we're analyzing or becoming informed, we've been looking at how do we support, just like I think Mama, the family that puts on the lock conference was talking about providing support for St. Kitts, St. Croix, because of the condition that, you know, from the hurricane. But what about the support we have to do in relationship to especially those who are, you know, doing the direct action? Should they be left alone only to the people in their area for the support line, if we're going to look at it from a military strategy supply line perspective? And I'm saying that because I think that we should understand in the listening audience that this is a thing, we're all in this together.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if we act like we're just watching a television program, then we're setting people up to be hurt.
Yes.
We're setting, you know, thinking that, and this, and we're acting like it's entertainment when it's really action.
And it's real life. We can't afford to be, like you said, like we watch a television program or we sit and watch a tennis match where your head just goes back and forth. This is real.
And
it's going to affect our children. That's the thing, right, about it. It's going to affect our children. Now, some people got the small mindset of, well, I ain't going to be here, so let them fend for themselves. We can't look at, no other nationality looks at situations like that. They try to look out for it because that's the future. You can't do that. And people that think like that, then we don't need them. I mean, come on.
We just need to identify them.
Yeah, exactly. And have them out of the way. Yeah.
Sit on sideline and just don't become no problem, because if you become a problem, we're going to have to do what the Harriet did. we have to put this thing, because, you know, like when you read that, Elliot, and we listen to, you know, these real live campaigns, what we're seeing, I mean, is that people are dying, young people dying for the lack of information, dying for the lack of food substances, that nutritional, dying from the lack of skills development for their own personal survival and therefore group survival. People are dying, and we're actually could be participating in it. And we have to raise that question, because, you know, King, like you said, King couldn't be no more explicit. Yeah, I mean, you don't give up your manhood or womanhood. You can't look for nobody else to do this. So if you can't look for nobody else to do it, what are we saying? It's rough. It's beautiful, but it's rough.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to some updates from them, and I know we're going to be in touch with them. I'm glad that Brother DJ called from one of the hosts of Us Lifting Us to offer his support, because you could see that they were more than willing to get on the phone and to network with him. So I know
they want to come to Philadelphia and you know, either assist or be a part of that development.
Yeah, but it's kind of funny that both of them said that you can't organize this from, you got to organize it from the grassroots.
Mm-hmm.
You can't, mm-hmm. you don't want their help. I mean, that's not surprising, but I didn't expect that, to hear that coming from them.
And the reason why that, to hear her say that, not only that the ministry that she has, but acknowledging that those young people, out of their own initiative, took this on, and they're following them.
Yeah.
That, it ain't like they're trying to turn them around. You know, I was making a comment earlier because that was one of my concerns. You know, but it's important because they need to understand. They need to understand that. When they had Occupy Wall Street, and what was that other thing? They were sleeping in them tents. Where did all those young people go? It was young black college students. Those black college students that were supporting Bernie Sanders, where did they go? Those are the ones that have the technical skill base. Those are the ones that have the will. Those are the ones we need to be out there, or at least be able to know that they're a part of the supporting in that supply line. Whether it be the medical supply line, the material supply line, whatever that supply line is, that communication supply line, instead of being ciphered off into the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
Or some of these other social networks about business, which then they got to get tied to the bank. And the bank selling a bill of goods, going to get, like you said, $5 million, Elliot. You can't do one business in one with $5 million.
I know it. And how do you pass that along to a black business magazine that's some type of huge sum of money? When you got to do, you don't even have to dig. I didn't even have to dig hard to find out all of these millions of dollars that's been given. Listen, these white guys are investing in these cities, and they ain't hardly putting up any of their money, Richard.
Right.
They ain't hardly putting up any of their money. When they buying all these lots of homes and downtown properties for $1.5 billion, that's almost like me and you spending $200 on something.
And if we were looking in our history,
and plus they're writing off in taxes, so they really ain't spending no money.
And if we look in our history of the cooperatives of the turn of the 20th century, 1900 through the 1930s, when they were buying up farmland through these cooperatives, and they were building up factories through these cooperatives, they were pulling those funds together to purchase these productive assets. If we were doing that now, and you heard Reverend Bobo's talk about how they have church credit unions, which came out of a reaction, but they were just for the members. Now they got to convince those members and the ministers that they need to open up that mechanism. If you funneled that money into those institutions and then they went out and went to the Detroits or went to the Louisiana, New Orleans, or went to Mississippi and bought tracts of land, for development.
Now that's a strategy. You're talking a strategy now. That's a strategy. And plus, Richard, listen, that's a start, because when he said that, well, we got stuff that we do in house,
right?
Where we have developed, because the larger credit union went under or folded, and we got something that we do in the church as far as, but we're trying to convince them to do it together as far as networking. But that's a start, because how many of these churches up here in the city of Philadelphia that you know have a credit union going on in their church?
Hey, look, they did a report. Remember, you know, they did a report. When I looked at the numbers, those numbers ain't big. The numbers they have in these, some of them, I mean, they were like $1,000. A couple of, maybe some maybe had maybe $10,000 because of the same tactical approach that they only opened up to the church members, you know, and the church members were putting in. So they are not open to the broader community to consolidate, which means now the economic education is about, well, even if you have very little, put your little, that $1 in this here church credit union, and this is how we'll parlay. Isn't that what Reverend Sullivan did?
Exactly.
But these
a little bit of money, you know what I mean? A very little bit of money from a lot of people.
And then was able to make good, sound, cooperative business decisions. It's hard. It ain't easy. You know, being in America in a capitalist system, it is not easy. You know, I agree with some people that says, you know, a capitalist is not what we want to be. Them guys are vicious, immoral, have no ethics.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what we want to be? It's a value question we have to make. So at least, like you were saying about the Susu, you know, which is the predecessor of the, you know, the credit union. At least that sets the tone of the economic value system. But you still have to have good management.
Yeah,
you have to have good decision making processes, and you have to have people who will trust each other. That you will make those decisions in their best interest.
Yeah.
But the pieces are there. And these guys are creating a condition. When they say America first, well, what about if white and white go to war? What if they have another civil war? Now who do we fight? Whose side we fight on? They have a civil war now. I mean, because if they popping off each other, they arming themselves on both sides, and then say, Negroes, you can't have no gun. Matter of fact, you can't even drive the car.
They did it before. Yeah, they did it before. So, you know, those are the type of discussions we need to have.
Yes.
And that need to be going on. Just like that, the Reverend said that in his church, they talk about these situations globally and how it's affecting black people. Yeah, that's what we've been talking about on this program, that those discussions need to be had in these places instead of hollering and screaming and on Sunday and talking about who's going to heaven and all that. You know, come on. I guess those conversations have its place, but it needs to be some concrete discussions going on, like he said that he had with his members. Those are the discussions that need to be had. Because then that'll start the critical thinking, which will in turn start the critical questions. And then somebody got to come up with some answers. I mean, shoot, come on. That's what's needed, Richard.
As you say, it's time for an awakening.
Listen, I want to, before we leave tonight, I want to... at least give the lineup again. November is the month where we're going to have at least two new programs starting. The start dates are not set in stone yet. I just know they're starting this month. At least two new programs coming to the Time for Awakening family. But the week starts out tomorrow with African Perspectives with Brother Hoshi. I think he'll be doing a live, a remote broadcast. I think he's in Los Angeles. Yeah. So he'll be doing things out there. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays is African Perspectives with Brother Hoshi from 11 to 1, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then on Wednesday, Revive, a show dedicated towards black millennials. with the whole sister POC. It's Wednesday, 8 o'clock p.m. to 10 p.m. 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. I'm sorry. Ulu, Us Lifting Us, with host Brother DJ, Brother Kambizi, and Baba Hakima, airs on Thursday, 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Time for Awakening is back on Friday evenings at 8 o'clock p.m. Saturday, SST, Saturday Sports Talk with Brother Troy Wilmore, is Saturday mornings, 10 o'clock to 12 noon. Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers, Saturdays from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. And then Revive starts things off again next Sunday morning, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., and then Time for an Awakening Sunday evening at 7 p.m. Again, I want to thank our guest that was with us this evening, No Justice, No Profit activist, Reverend Dinah Tatman, and Pastor Ronald Bobo. Thank them for being with us, and we'll get some updates from them in the future dealing with No Justice, No Profit. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware of, I know, the things that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, save the children.